Hi, this is Steve Howe, and you're listening to the Rock Solid Podcast.
Make me a deal and make it good for me. I won't get full of myself, so I can't afford to be. This is small town music, this is big town music. He's ahead of his time, you know, but he can't use it. If only he could prove it. Well, tomorrow's just a song away, a song away, a song away.
Hey everybody, welcome to Rock Solid, the comedy podcast for all things music, both new and classic. I'm Pat Francis, and joining me in the Zoom room today is Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee, the legendary guitarist of Yes. Please welcome Mr. Steve Howe. Hello, Steve.
Hello there, Pat. How you doing?
I'm good. Now, where are you located right now, Steve?
Somewhere in the UK.
Somewhere in the UK. Excellent. So it's the evening for you, and I appreciate you being here.
That's all right, yeah.
So the reason you're here is because on October 1st, there's going to be a new Yes album called The Quest. It's the first studio album in 7 years. How did this album come to be?
Well, in the second half of 2019, we didn't have any touring because we did all our hard work touring in the first half of the 2019. So that's when we started talking about the album a bit more and talking to Thomas Weber at Inside Out, and he said, yeah, I'd really like to pick up the record, you know, I mean, a really good Yes record. So we basically had the backing there, and we started doing that, and then the end of October, John and I met to try out a system where I was producing and I could have a headquarters studio with Curtis Schwartz sound, and basically him and I have been working together for 20 years or more, and I felt that between us, we could steer this away because we had a facility and, you know, we had all the internet connections and everything like that. So we just started doing it that way. It wasn't all done by file sharing because John Davison was in England quite a lot, and so was Jeff Downes, and they could come over to meet me besides sending their files through Curtis. But also that's where I started, you know, sort of like redesigning and producing the record so that it was going to, you know, meet the criteria.
And I do want to mention that, Steve Howe, you are listed as the producer on this record. Last time out, you guys used a big name producer, Roy Thomas Baker, and this time out, you decided to do it yourself. The album sounds amazing. I mean, I am really enjoying it.
Well, I'm pleased to hear that. Yeah, I mean, Trevor Horn did a pretty good job on Fly From Here, but I think once we got to this point, I felt that it wasn't any use giving up our, not freedom, but giving up our the way we work and the way that the relationships have built up over the years with this lineup. That except somebody else in there in the suit was a kind of more of an obstacle than a help, because nobody was sure, certainly after the Roy Thomas Baker experience, which was the second time Yes tried to work with Roy, and it wasn't successful the first time, and it didn't come out properly the first time. But anyway, that's a long way away.
Right, sure.
Well, basically, I've been part of the production team of Yes for all these years, and I produced my own records, and I really felt confident to do it, you know, and I've been interested in that side of recording ever since I walked in my first recording studio, which was in 1964 with a producer called Joe Meek. And I've always been interested in what producers do and one of the main things that I said to the guys was that all my records, you know, the Steve Howe solo album, like Love Is and all these other records, all been made very happy. You know, people get paid, they enjoy working. Right. It's done in a fruitful, positive, you know, friendly environment. Why can't Yes do that? Because the last 5 records have been like pulling teeth.
Yeah.
So I said, no, if I'm going to produce, it's got to be a friendly, ongoing, everybody's, you know, getting on. So that's basically what we achieved, you know, which is, you know, which is quite something in itself, that kind of level.
Well, you know, I think you guys did it because the first single that we heard was The Ice Bridge, and I love that song. And it does, this does have like an easy breezy, happy feeling to it. So you definitely nailed it. And yeah, your discography, you have like over, I don't know, 50 studio albums that you're credited on. So yeah, I'm sure you can handle yourself in the studio just fine, Steve. Now I want to ask this. This is also the first album without Chris Squire. Were you guys feeling his presence during the recording of The Quest?
Well, to an extent, yeah. I mean, you know, there was a big gap to fill, and fortunately, Billy had been, you know, I dare say, idolizing isn't the wrong word, but he'd been in Chris's slipstream for a very long time,
right?
And you know, he had Chris's approval to stand in when we hoped Chris was merely going to go through a recuperation, long as it was going to be, but hopefully it was going to come out the other side. But as Chris didn't, it was a tragedy. But there again, you know, we took a little while to decide what to do. And I've repeatedly held Yes back on making records, you know, because the people weren't ready. You know, we didn't have the songs, you know, we didn't have the collaborations and the writing together. So basically that was what was needed. And that helped us get over Chris not being here.
Right.
And also Billy didn't overly self-consciously, you know, feel that he had to step into a new gig. It was a gig he's been part of, you know, for a lot of his life. And now there was the time when he was playing bass. So I guess he was thrilled in a way, but also, you know, there was certain trepidation, certain expectation that we couldn't have. And as you rightly said, you know, this is the first record without Chris, but we hope that people love the bass and it rocks, you know, and it drives and it moves and it's climactic. It certainly figures great in the way that Billy designed really what the drums would do as well.
Right.
In the way that he overdubbed the bass, you know, and he took on the tracks and developed them in such a way where they had openings for drums to punctuate and to resonate with Billy. So it was really a good start. I think the process we did, the gradual process, very much like my own albums, I tend to start with a bed track that's really going to be updated, but it's got to have some key ingredients, usually guitars,
right,
key ingredients that say, okay, well, this is going there, you know, it's going there. So once it's got some of that, then you can develop it. And, you know, we added the drums last, you know, and I would just like to add that one of the spectacular times was when we'd finished the stereo mixing that you've heard, but then we did the 5.1 straight away. And that was really exciting because not a lot of people have 5.1, but if you have it and you put the Quest on, this is a record like made for 5.1, just because it was so fluid to go from stereo to 5.1 that we carried the same excitement that we had on the stereo mixes, but we broadened and heightened and lowered, and we did everything with the sounds that, that allowed you in 5.1. There's a side point, anyway.
Well, I can't think of a better band to have a 5.1 mix than Yes. I mean, let's be honest.
Well, this is the first time we've ever released a stereo mix on the same day as a vinyl and the same day as a 5.1. I mean, that shows some organization,
yeah,
because we've done that. It's all like, it's all there. If you want to get the 5.1, you can get the 5.1. And you've got the stereo too, of course, thrown in. But basically, we had a sense of getting things, you know, getting the ducks lined up, you know, and not just, you know, kind of forging ahead irrespective of various requirements. So there was all those requirements that we want to release with all the formats.
And that's October 1st, everybody. All the formats on October 1st. Let me give a shout out to the current lineup. John Davison on vocals, Jeff Downs on keyboards, Billy Sherwood on bass, and of course, Alan White on drums. I want to talk to you about, there's a song on here called Mystery Tour that you wrote. Yeah. It's a tribute to the Beatles.
John was a fighter, his fist in a glove. Across the universe, he spoke of love. Paul was a worker, but he got the blame when the party was over. We all felt the same. They let it be like they'd never been born. We heard the silver hammer till the break of dawn. Shining like the moon and the stars and the sun. They knew the revolution had already begun.
What made you decide to pay tribute to the Fab Four?
Well, it started in 1985. Last year I found a piece of paper that was dated 1985. I don't know what time in 1985 it was, but it had a sketch of those lyrics. It had about half of the lyrics that are part of that song. And what I did was, I didn't have a melody, you know, there was no recording of these lyrics for me to reference, but I just came across them in piles of old lyrics, you know, drafts of lyrics. And basically I thought, oh, well, just for fun, you know, I'll throw this in as an offering, you know, it's kind of light and breezy and, you know, see if they like it. So the guys heard it and said, well, we like this. Yeah, everybody said they liked it. So we polished it up a bit. And what I did was, when I was sitting with those lyrics, I thought, what's the last verse tune that I wrote? So I looked at my digital recorder and listened back to things. And I heard this tune that went da 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 that I'd written. So I thought, you know, that fits, you know, and I took that melody, and that's how I started, you know, writing the final version of Mystery Tour. So, you know, we're delighted to wave a hand or give a shout to the Beatles, because really they're the most fantastic band that's ever been.
Well, that's...
they were so talented and they made so many breakthroughs in popular music that, it was nice to bring that awareness and our love for them so much.
Yeah, and I want to tell people, it's not the typical Yes song, but man, when I heard it for the first time, it immediately put a smile on my face. That's the kind of song it is. So great job on that, Steve.
Thank you.
Second single is Dare to Know. And another great song that you wrote, and you guys, I don't like to compare albums to albums, but I have to say that for me, I am enjoying this album much more than the last studio album. I mean, I think John's singing is on point everything is just copacetic. I don't know. It's just fantastic.
I think John's made a leap, you know, because not least of all because he didn't have Roy Thomas Baker yelling at him.
Right.
But basically, he had me developing and giving him the confidence to know that I wanted what he wanted. I wanted to find out where he saw this, how he was going to stylize that lyric, how he was going to harmonize it, or how he present his own songs. So basically, that was a joy. And I think everybody, you know, came up, you know, raised their game this time and really pulled their socks up. Thought, well, you know, we want to kind of, what we're trying to do here is not a simulate a Yes record, but reinvent a Yes record.
Right.
We don't want it to be like, oh, it's a poor man's attempt at trying to do Close to the Edge or something. You know, we just shunned away, I shunned away in particular from any, you know, like close reference to previous records, because I wanted to kind of reinvent our opportunity here to reestablish a recording situation that had the right kind of validity and the right kind of perfectionism without being clinical, you know. And I guess that's you know, just, you know, in my confidence and my experience, you know, there's no reason why something isn't going to rock when it's got all the right sort of things going for it. And that's what we were doing.
Well, again, you guys did it.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
I want to ask about the cover artwork is by Roger Dean. When Roger does a cover for you guys, do you guys just tell him the title of the album and then let him go? Or does he show you a bunch of different things and you choose one? How does this work?
Well, more the first one, because basically the title is very important. You know, you know the title has to kind of sit. Everybody quite happy with the title. You move forwards, and Roger dreamed up a sort of concept where this quest was about this journey across from one part of the universe to another part of the universe, or one part of a terrain to another part of terrain. So of course we love working with Roger. We think he's brilliant, and he's always come up with great new ideas for us each time we make a record. And so basically he had plenty of time to kind of develop this very intricate, complex drawing. But again, the light that comes from it, you know, the brightness, the positive colors that are sort of resonating from it really helped to give the album, you know, so much of a opportunity, you know, to continue the luck that we had running into Roger all those years ago, and how consistent his contributions to our records have been.
Yeah, and there's definitely, like you said, there's definitely a brightness and a light to this album cover. It's just fantastic. Steve, in 2022, you guys are going to do another album series tour, and you're going to feature the album Relayer. When you do one of these album tours, is there room then to play some of the classic hits and feature music from the Quest?
Well, yeah, that's what we're hoping to do. I mean, obviously, when we booked the Relayer tour, we had lots of flexibilities about would we play Close to the Edge as well. And so we said, no, let's just commit to Relayer. That's the album that intrinsically is the most lost gem of Yes. And it was made with Patrick Mraz, and it was a spectacular album. And we played all the others, most of the others we played in the album series, and loved doing the whole album. So we will do that, but we will also build in some tracks from The Quest. We haven't decided which ones, but maybe, you know, it's not too unclear which ones they might be. They certainly will be the ones that we think people will know best, because and by the time we get out in April and then come round to America later next year, then hopefully the record won't be like so much of a new record right. unheard. It'll be like a new record not heard on stage yet. So hopefully we can bring what Yes usually bring to a live performance of a studio album is the same power, you know. Increasement of the live quality, but there again, the accuracy of the parts have to be very, very consistent. That's why we do a lot of homework, and we demand of each other that we all come to rehearsal knowing the song, knowing the words, knowing everything, or having the cues to recall all this stuff so that we can do that. So yeah, the tour hopefully will still feature Relayer, but it'll have a nice bit of The Quest and a general, you know, the sort of like sort through the other music that we know people love.
Let me go way back now to 1970 when you joined the band, and the first album you appeared on is the Yes album, and this is still considered one of the classics in the band's discography. What do you remember about the recording of that first album with featuring Steve Howe?
Well, I guess there was a lot of adventurism. There was a lot of positive hopefulness that this band, you know, this lineup could sort of like converge onto something that was better than Yes and Time and a Word, the two previous albums. And Atlantic were going to bin Yes if we hadn't got off the ground on the third one. They only had three albums. So it was like the make or break it album. Not that altered anything, because we just did what we did. So we basically went in and did what we did, which was developed from the rehearsals and the writing, you know, to go in the studio and work it up, so to speak, and slightly reinvent the rehearsal tapes that we had, maybe from one thing to another. Although we didn't have a lot on Starship Trooper certainly Good People didn't sound much like that. We, in other words, what we did was, and we certainly did this on The Quest, was that we took the basic song and said, you know, how do we improve that? How do we bring more finesse, more tonal changes, more development to this? And how do we use vocals and the instrumentational power of Yes to its best advantage? And the Yes album has so many moments there where we're, you know, we're plowing into like Yours and His Grace, and we're 3 minutes in and the song hasn't started.
Right, exactly.
It's a kind of warning of what was to come with this band, you know, with the big intros and the big pieces. So, but there again, it was still contained, a bit more like The Quest is. It's contained to several songs. It's not like got one song on one side and two on the other, because the bigger scale the pieces take a little bit longer to work up. And I felt that it wasn't essential for us to come out this time with, with the 20-minute piece. It was a bit of a cliche. It was one I wanted to avoid, not because I don't like them, because I love them, but I think that where we were at was with this kind of variety of songs that shows the writing of different members collaborating, mm-hmm. and basically developing the songs for each other.
I have to say that also the Yes album, second track on there, they let Steve Howe have a nice instrumental with clap. Just still fantastic whenever you are able to play that live. So I love that too.
I can still remember when I sort of said to the guys, we were having dinner together in this old thatched house. And I said to them, well, by the way, I have got this instrumental that I wrote. And they said, well, you play. And I went, diddle it, diddle it, diddle it. They said, oh, that's great. Stick it on the album. I thought, oh, I just lucked out. I really lucked out. I joined this band, we're writing an album, and hey, they like this solo. So clap did become part of the introduction of my guitar work into it, but in a way that was so unexpected. You know, I mean, it's a folk guitar, country picking, Chet Atkins sort of piece, you know, and it's on a Yes album. It didn't all sound right, but it's strange how it works. And the colour, once again, we followed on with Fragile, where everybody had the chance to do a solo. So that also showed the diversity of the different members, you know, with so many different sort of approaches to what the opportunity meant to have a solo. And, of course, I played Mood for a Day, and basically I followed in the same path, but Bill's original concept, he did have the concept for Fragile, Bill Bruford, and he thought the band should be directed by each member one at a time, which, of course, he did on 5% for Nothing, the right. Most brilliant and shortest track ever recorded by us. And all those things on Fragile were really a development from the opportunity the guys gave me on the Yes album.
Now, you just dropped the name Chet Atkins. I wanted to ask you, because guitar players now, they'll reference Steve Howe as inspiration. And Steve, you've been in my musical life since I can remember. My whole life, I've known Steve Howe music. Who are some of your guitar, should I say the word heroes, or who did you look towards for technique and to learn from?
Well, I mean, I didn't realize it, but before Chet, because when I discovered Chet, I was about 13, I'd only been playing a year or so, and I thought, this guy must be overdubbing, you know, you can play the ones here, boop, dip, boop, down the beat. You know, and I remember sitting in a room with a guy saying, that must be overdubbing. Well, I don't think it is. Of course, it wasn't. So before that, I was exposed, if you like, to Les Paul, very much so through my parents, inadvertently. They had, you know, The Lord Is Waiting for the Sunrise and How High the Moon, which are absolutely brilliant recordings. And beautiful singing by Mary Ford. We'll be right back. So there was a package that was just part of my world. You know, I didn't necessarily think that was my inspiration. But as I plowed through guitarists, you know, like the Hank Marvins and the guitar instrumental era was a joyful time. I wish that would come back. I'd be right on that stage. But basically, guitar instrumentals had this incredible fling, which obviously inspired me. But what I was doing was, instead of looking at the popular guitarist who you couldn't help but get to know, I said to myself, well, who don't I know? You know, I mean, who can I find that's my guy? You know, and that's really how I found Chet, I guess, in this quest to find other people. And along came Wes Montgomery, and I got into jazz guitar, I got into classical guitar through Julian Bream and John Williams, you know, I got into folk guitar, you know, Martin Carthy, and everybody that I could turn to was really playing a different kind of guitar. And that's where I took a big chunk out of Chet, which is that Chet's a very versatile player. He plays it in so many different ways, and I guess that's what I wanted to do, and that's what I do.
Yeah.
Whether I like it or not, I'm not a blues guitarist. I can play blues. I'm not a jazz guitarist. I can play a bit of jazz. You know, so I do a bit of all of it, but what I do mainly is pull it into a Steve Howe method, a Steve Howe approach, I guess. And that started, you know, being more visible at the Yes album, I guess, where there's, you know, there's even the Portuguese guitar on that one, which is an unusual kind of bright sound. So basically I started mixing the sounds with Yes, and I was doing it before a little, but never more so than when Yes gave me that golden opportunity. So yeah, I mean, a guitar with a volume pedal, you know, that was something that I thought was standard, but it wasn't, you know. But Chet used that a lot. People use it as an expression pedal. Pedal steel players use it a great deal because you don't always want to hear the attack of the note. You want to hear the chord lurching. So I got interested in playing pedal steel, and therefore the guys that inspired me, like Speedy West in a big way. Were just like, they were just numerous. They were so numerous that I could keep finding other guitarists that weren't necessarily as famous as some of the guys.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Let me ask you about this. In 1991, Steve, you play some Spanish guitar on a Queen album. And the album's Innuendo, and the song is Innuendo.
Through the sorrow, all through our splendor, don't take offense at my innuendo.
Thank you.
Were you actually in the studio with the band when that happened?
Yeah. I was in that. They'd recorded the whole album, and I was having lunch in Montreux. A guy saw me from their crew and said, "Hey, come down the studio. The guys would love to see you." So I said, "Sure." When I went in there, it was a setup. They said, "Look, we want to play the album." I said, "Well, of course, just hit me, you know, hit the play button." And it was great, you know, all the songs went through, you know, I'm Going Slightly Mad, and everything was coming at me. And they didn't play the innuendo until last. So they played innuendo. They said, "This is the opening track, innuendo." Bang! I thought, I never heard Queen sounding better than this.
Right.
And so they said at the end, it ended, and they said, "Well, do you think you could play some guitar on this?" I was like, completely shocked, you know. I said, "Well, but you don't need any guitar. Listen to Brian. You know, he's got all those Spanish guitars." He said, "Yeah, but that's more structural. We would like somebody to, you know, play on top." You know, so I said, "Well, yeah. I mean, I'll have a go." So I did about three takes. We went off and had dinner. We came back and we kind of listened to them and said, "Well, that bit's nice on this one, and yeah, maybe it can go into this one." So we basically, you know, designed a guitar that comes in. And. And the inspiration there was not that I could possibly play like him, but they kind of said, "Could you play a bit like Paco de Lucía?" You know, I was like, "Well, hang on a second. He's the most brilliant flamenco guitarist in the world. And you want me to..." He said, "You know what I mean." Yeah. So, of course, that's really what I did. I just threw myself in it. And one of the things that I've been most happy about my whole career is that I can improvise. You know, I can hear some music, and if somebody says, "You want to play on that?" I can possibly find something to play, just because I guess because I'm versatile, but also because I've had that gift of, if it is a gift, I don't know what else it is, it's to be able to just improvise, just play something off the top of my head, not think about it, just play something, you know, find some notes that sound nice, you know.
Well, you nailed it on innuendo, and I didn't even know you played on that. I always assumed it was Brian until I read the liner notes, and I'm like, wait a minute. So, great job. I have to talk, I have to bring up Asia, because, you know, Asia and Yes are your, or I mean, those are the two biggest successes in your career, if I may. And in 1982, you dominated the charts with this new band, Yes, with John Wetton, Carl Palmer, and Jeff Downs. And when I listen to that record now, you all sound rejuvenated, like you needed to do something different and make that album. Was that an easy record to make?
Well, fairly easy, yeah, because basically we'd been writing, we'd been forming the band. You know, John and I got together first and had a few weeks jamming and talking about different things we liked and different kinds of songs, and started on a few bits of writing like Cutting It Fine and Here Comes That Feeling, One Step Closer. So basically we were starting to share, and he said, "Well, what about Carl?" And he said, "Well, yeah, I mean, Carl would be a great drummer." So we got Carl in, and they... first of all said, you know, just that's it, you know, three of us, great. And I said, no, I gotta have a keyboard player. Like, I've been working with Jeff Downs, I mean, he's got like thin claviers and Fairlights and all these things, you know, we can doodle away. So Jeff came down and we did the audition. So once that happened, and John and Jeff started writing songs, you know, it was really something. And I think that there's that balance that we've got on the Quest. You know, there's a lot of John and Jeff, but there is a sufficient amount of me poking my guitar in there, and that makes for a collaborative sound on the record. So certainly it would be very hard, you know, to find a way of doing an Asia record that good again. I mean, but I think I've got to give credit to Mike Stone, who at the time had come off the back of some of his successes with Journey and other bands, And he was brilliant. He was funny. He was pleasant. He engineered and produced, and he was bossy at times, which producers need to be. But also he was a lot of fun. You know, he was really a lot of fun. So, but that was the honeymoon. The first album was like a honeymoon. And as you point out, it sounds like we all felt right, and we did. We all felt very right, very much excited that Geffen had signed us, and you know, this was going to be a golden opportunity, so don't mess it up. And we didn't. And,
no.
It's a wonderful record.
And I want to give a shout out to the B-side that you and John co-wrote together called Ride Easy. I always loved that song. Excellent track.
Oh, good.
Many days I've traveled, but I know not where I'm going to. I'm lost, lost along the way. From Mexico to Paris, always the same solitary supper in an empty cafe. The faces were so empty, meaningless and negative to me. I could have died. The parties and the strangers reflected in their glasses as they drank, not seeing eye to eye.
Yeah, I mean, there aren't many songs that I've ever forgotten I wrote, but when somebody pointed out to me that, well, he didn't mention, you know, I was talking about Asia songs, and they said, yeah, but you didn't mention Ride Easy. I said, oh, yeah, Ride Easy. And then somebody said, yeah, but you wrote that. And I don't often forget anything I write, but John and I collaborated on that one, and obviously it's got the riffs and it's got the thing. Yeah, it's a really good title, and I'm glad it's still been popularized, you know.
And I want to let people know, in 2007, 24 years after you left Yes, you guys come back and do a hugely successful reunion tour. And then the four original members, you guys make three more studio albums, 2008 through 2012. And you guys made some great music on those albums. I mean, just great stuff.
Yeah, it was nice to get back together and not only do the successful tours that were spawned from our reunion, and because obviously a band with original members is very powerful. And then we started on you know, those three albums, the work, you know, on those three albums, Phoenix, Omega, and Triple X. So basically, we were in a nice place. It was kind of maybe bad news for Yes, bad news for Asia, that quite soon Yes got back together.
Right.
I remember John Lennon saying to me, well, I think they're going to be your priority, aren't they? And I said, well, I'm going to share this out. You know, I'm going to be available. And after several years of being in two big bands, I'd realized that, about 4 years after Yes got back together and Asia were in this stream of reunion, I just felt it was just too difficult. I could deal with doing a solo album on the side or my Steve Howe trio, but not if I was in two bands at
right.
the same time. So it was a kind of compromise. But, you know, the guys got to understand it, and it was a good fling. I mean, it was a six-year fling, and, we played around the world, and we did three albums, and it was very good.
And I guess as you're older, when you want to make the decision to leave Asia at that point, everyone kind of understands.
Yeah.
One more thing before we wrap it up and talk about the new album a little bit more. In 1989, you get back together with John Anderson for Anderson, Bruford, Wakeman, and Howe.
Hey,
reached out to who for this project to happen?
Well, yeah, that period after I've been in GTR and that had a short life, a bit like Asia. And so I was trundling through preparing an album called Turbulence that came out in 1990. So basically I was kind of busy, and John reached out to me and said, what he said was, have you got any songs? And I said, yeah, I got a cassette with six on it. Do you want to come over? So he comes over and he takes the cassette away. And believe it or not, that it was a part of the foundation of the album, you know, songs that I'd written that John developed, you know, and Brother of Mine was a song of mine. There was one called Brother of Mine, but it's now called The Big Dream and all that kind of thing. I mean, it contains these songs, and much like you go through the album, a lot of it is when you see my name, it comes from my cassette. So yeah, that was an interesting project. I mean, for Rick, Bill and I, the worst thing about it was when we decided to become Yes, because in fact we'd established ABWH beyond any doubt that we were a version of Yes that called ABWH. But you know, we had Tony Levin, we had some accompanying musicians, and basically it was all built to run, and we were starting the second one. And the tracks on Union, Yes by Yes, that are from the ABWH camp were really destined to be ABWH 2, if you like. So that was it was a disappointment, even though at the time it was like bigging it up, you know, where we're going to be, Yes. We didn't really think it was necessary, but it all became a bit of a monster, you know, and it went on for ages, and there were good patches and there were not so good patches. But after it, you know, the crazy thing was, Rick, Bill and I didn't even have Yes or ABWH. We weren't in either.
Right.
Because it kind of folded in such a silly way. So I think that people should have learned quicker, you know, when you're under something good, you know, as they say, don't fix it. You know, if it's not broken, don't fix it. And ABWH wasn't broken, but there was the desire to become Yes, as if it was more important than becoming doing another ABWH. That's my feelings anyway.
And the tracks, the standout tracks on Union album are, in my opinion, the ones that would have been on ABWH too. So
yeah,
just my opinion. But John had big success with that 80s sound of Yes, and you were having big success with Asia. And then when you guys came back together, you kind of brought it back to the Yes sound that we were missing. So thank you for that album is what I want to say. Let me tell people right now, the website is yesworld.com. Instagram and Twitter are at Yes Official. And the new album, The Quest, comes out on October 1st in all formats, vinyl, Blu-ray 5.1, stereo mix, all that good stuff. Now, Steve, here's the question for you. What song from the new album should I use as our playout song today? I know, difficult.
There's eight on the main album and there's three on the bonus track. I mean, Sleeping Sister Soul is the song that's got the Portuguese guitar on it, which is something I, you know, did on Wondrous Stories, Good People, Nine Voices, Hour of Need, you know, it comes a lot. And that's a surprising kind of track, because it's got so much of the ingredients that that one associates with Yes, but it's acoustic, you know, it's more or less acoustic. And I just picked that for a laugh, you know. I mean, Dare to Know and all the big tracks are there, but this track's really quite special and it mustn't be missed. Sleeping Sister Soul.
All right, you've got it, Steve Howe. Thank you so much for giving me your time today. I can't wait for other people to hear the album, because I've really been enjoying it. And the playout song is Sister Sleeping Soul. Thank you, Steve.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Take care.
All right, then. Take care, Pat. It's been fun and very sweet. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye for now.
Where have you gone? Your heart full of song. Oh, sister of my soul. And bright, you clung to my side. Through all those teenage magic, tragic nights, the hazy, crazy days of our youth, thinking we were bulletproof. It was then that I lost you. You're burning out my shooting star. Yeah, you went too far. It was then that I lost you. Sister sleeping soul. Sister sleeping soul. Where are you now? Far across the wide sea. Walk in some city. By your liquid dream, you're carried downstream. Spun way out of all control, caught by the undertow. In your heart was a song. Where have you gone? In my heart, you belong. Sleep.